Hello and welcome to this week's Next Sense Institute podcast. My name's Trudy Smith. I'm the manager of continuing professional education at the Next Sense Institute, and I'm your podcast host. We're continuing our series on advocacy, and today we invite back an old friend to the podcast, Mike Corrigan. Welcome, Mike. Could you please introduce yourself to anyone who hasn't heard one of our previous podcasts together?
Thanks, Trudy. Sure. I'm Mike Corrigan. I've been totally blind since birth, and I'm an assistive technology specialist at NextSense. I work with NextSense clients to help them identify the technology they need to help them achieve their goals and provide support and training to use it. I also provide support and training for assistive technology to people in the field of vision loss through NextSense Institute. And you can ask Trudy about how we can help you.
And we will certainly talk about that more now, but I really just want to talk about you right now, Mike. And I'm curious if you could tell us some of your experiences as an advocate for yourself to begin with.
I feel that I and others who are blind have needed to self-advocate for most of our lives, although we didn't call it that when I was young. For me, self-advocacy is about informing and educating others about what blindness is really like for me. My capabilities and the things that people can do to increase my inclusion in everyday activities. So this can mean mainly dispelling their misunderstandings about blindness and a lot of the assumptions, the negative assumptions that they've had. For me, self-advocacy can be as simple as, telling tradesmen working at my place that I'm blind, and asking they tell me where they're leaving their equipment and if they need to move it to somewhere that I'm likely to walk, or asking a shop assistant to explain a product in the detail and in the way I need so I can understand it. Examples of more complex self-advocacy include negotiating accessible information from organisations like legal and financial institutions and some community groups. For example, some organisations still print their information and send it out on paper in the mail. I asked for an accessible digital version so I can read it independently with my computer, and I explained this to them. When I have asked how the information was prepared, the answer has often been that it was prepared in Word, printed, then sent out. Emailing the document to me electronically provides me with independent access. I'll receive it sooner, and the cost of the provider is far less. Faster turnaround and lower costs hadn't often occurred to many organisations who have used paper forever and still love using it.
Kind of ironic, really, isn't it?
It is. It is. They've gone to extra work to slow a process down and make it more inaccessible. And they didn't know they did it.
No, that thinking through, I guess, of just how simple they could be making things. So, Mike, I wonder what your experiences are of advocating for blind and low vision clients.
I want to make an important distinction here. The important difference for me between self-advocacy and advocating for clients is that my advocacy is about their story, not mine. Someone who's blind may bring your valuable life experience to the advocacy for your clients, and this might assist greatly. However, it's important to understand the person's goals, the way they wish to work, their abilities, and the positive benefits that might come from future training and support. I am part of a team that provides independent expert advice to clients and their families, and others like community and hobby groups the client wishes to be engage in. The client might ask for a technology assessment, a consultation with their school, or a meeting with others about ways to improve their inclusion. Some of the questions I've been asked by schools are, how will the client deal with written information? Can they take notes and write essays on their computer? Can they read and send emails and chat over a chat program? How will they manage research on the internet? And the answer to all of those things really forms part of the advocacy and the specialist assistive technology advocacy that I would do for clients. It is important to identify the specific systems the client needs to use and test them with suitable assistive technology if possible to establish their accessibility. I also ask for an example of some tasks the client might need to perform and walk through it with staff so they can see it work with assistive technology. And doing that actually provides some of the advocacy because they can see that, okay, the client might not quite know how to do this yet, but it can be done. If access issues occur, I try to identify the main issues and propose alternatives. For example, if the system a school uses to distribute information is currently inaccessible, I'd suggest that the client's material be emailed directly to them in an accessible format.
Thanks for that, Mike. And I know that you also sometimes contribute to NDIS meetings. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of that contribution?
I've been asked by NDIS to provide independent advice about the benefits to a client from the assistive technology identified as most suitable to help them achieve their goals. Again, this is about their needs, not mine. So what I do is support the client's assistive technology request by answering questions from the NDIS delegate. Again, this is about the client's need, not mine. In this role, I support the client's assistive technology-related requests by answering questions from the NDIS delegate, and they usually ask about the way the equipment works, how it will help the client achieve their goals, and the reason why the client needs a solution, the particular one that they've requested, rather than an alternative. So, for example, a client may have long-term experience with a Braille note taker and have genuine difficulties using alternatives requiring simultaneous use of mainstream equipment and a lower cost standalone Braille display because it involves two items. So we would advocate for the more expensive solution for some clients because of those difficulties and explain them thoroughly so that they're clearly understood by the NDIS delegate. And can I just do a shout out here too, that if you do need help with advocacy for NDIS and assistance navigating the system, our NextSense NDIS team can help. So don't hesitate to get in touch with them.
Thanks for that, Mike. Mike, why is this work so important for you?
There's many reasons why this work is important to me, and some include to promote understanding of the opportunities now available to people who are blind and have vision loss from the development of new accessible solutions. To raise awareness of barriers to these opportunities, like the provision of inaccessible software and information. And I want to increase an understanding of solutions to them. So we offer resources about preparing accessible information and developing accessible software. Accessibility brings benefits for a wide range of people, not only people with disabilities, but everyone.
Thanks for this, Mike. And I wonder, the question I'm asking everyone that's involved in advocacy in some shape or form, what advice you have for professionals and families who need to advocate for a person who's blind or has vision loss?
I'd say, first of all, take time to understand the person's individual situation, their goals, abilities, needs, and the way they wish to work. That's very important because without understanding that, you can't really explain that to someone else. So get a very good grounding and understanding in that.
Yeah.
Promote self-advocacy skills. Help the person to understand their disability and to explain and demonstrate the solutions for overcoming its limitations to other people. And in that way, people will start to develop confidence in their ability. Build confidence. Acknowledge achievements when providing training and support. And remember, training and support can be informal as well as formal. In fact, there's many skills, daily living skills, taught by parents, just around the home, giving the person a chance to do something like, you know, perhaps a mundane task like the washing up or cleaning, and getting the skills and procedures right that you need to know that you can get this done for yourself. Encourage ongoing independent learning. Help the person to develop skills to safely try new things out for themselves. Assess whether they work and how to change a procedure if it doesn't work. Build relationships with those who can assist you, and that's for professionals and, you know, for clients. If you're out there advocating for yourself, build relationships with people who can help you. If you're a professional, identify those people who can help you help the client and build a relationship with them, and so you can explain and advocate for their cause or your own cause more. My experience has been that most people want to include you if they know how, and that's what you have to help them understand. Stay up to date with assistive solutions. Technology can change quickly, bringing new opportunities. So don't miss out on the opportunities it can bring, or to get a knowledge of any barriers that emerge as well, and to be able to speak up about them. And then I guess the big one, have confidence in your ability. Over many years supporting and helping people to achieve goals, I've found that people can almost certainly achieve more than you think you can. So give it a go, give it a try, and I think you might surprise yourself and get yourself a whole lot of new independent skills and definitely improve your life quality.
Thanks for that, Mike. So I guess what I'm really hearing is personalizing and making sure that your advocacy suits the needs of the person, and then build their own capacity to be advocating for themselves in the long term.
Absolutely, because I think all of us will need to be advocating for ourselves right throughout our lives, whatever we do.
Sure. Thank you for that, Mike. You've given us lots to think about and lots to take on board. So we really appreciate you spending the time talking today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much. And we will see you all next week.